When I was growing up, I was always told that I was too much to handle. I was too loud, too opinionated, too demanding, just plain too much. Now, as an adult, I celebrate these qualities within myself and within the women I know. This is a call to action. This is a space to own your too muchness. This is too much to handle. Hannah Cranston here, and I am sitting with another TYT alum, the former host of Nerd Alert, Kim Horcher. She's now on Collider Movie Talk and Jedi Council. We are going to talk about how Kim made her passion for gaming, Star Wars, cosplay, and geek culture overall her day job. All right, this is incredible. We are going to get to all of that and so much more. But first, I want to give a shout out to the reviewer of the week, The Plantain Supernova. And they said, Hannah, I've always loved your content slash opinions on TYT and Think Tank, and I'm so stoked that you're still creating great content. I've already shared this with my mom and sisters. I love that. I love that you are spreading the love. That means so, so much to me. And it means so, so much to me that you took the time to leave one of these reviews. You guys, these reviews are life for those of us in the podcast world. And it makes my day. It makes my week. Plus, it is helpful for the success of the show. So I appreciate you guys doing that. And I love that you shared this. And I loved that you appreciated my work at TYT, especially because I have another TYTer here on the show. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Hannah.
I love it. I love that we like still have this like post TYT cult.
I feel like we're closer now than when we worked at TYT.
I feel like that is true. That is so true. I feel like I'm like, same with Grace. Like me and Grace are much closer now too. Like there was something about leaving there that I think like then brought us together.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It is a beautiful thing. I want to talk about your journey because I don't think a lot of people know about it. And even people who may not know you, because you started out as a local news journalist and that somehow – you're going to have to break this down for our listeners. Somehow that led you to getting to play video games on camera for a living.
Yeah.
Walk me through that, Kim.
All right. Well, when I was in college, I had always done student journalism. I actually interned at a station down the street from here. And I was always like, all right, I'm going to be a journalist. I'm going to be a broadcast journalist. My journey is going to be that I'm going to start at a low or what is it? I'm trying to think how to say it, but a smaller market and then work to a medium-sized market and then hopefully get to a large market. And I always thought I'd do that. I had a reporter's reel. I had experience as, well, I started as assignment desk assistant, then assignment desk editor, then writer, producer. I anchored and reported at a smaller Orange County station. Mm. And I just never really bit the bullet and went to my first market. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of sacrifices in it. You have to really want it.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to admit to myself that I didn't want it that bad.
You know what? Isn't that funny when we feel like we're hitting a wall and can't achieve the things that we want? And we're just like, I can't make that commitment. And then you realize with hindsight, you're like, it's because I didn't want it that bad. Like when you want something really bad, you will do everything in your power to get it, no matter what. And that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah. I mean, I had always thought this is my path. This is all I know how to do.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, at 22, oh, I'm burnt out. I don't know what I have no skills. I don't know what to do anymore.
Oh my God, burnt out at 22.
I know.
But when you're burnt out doing a job like that, I oftentimes think maybe you're not in the right job.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I mean, I don't behoove anyone who wants this, but it just, it wasn't for me. And it took me a long time to realize that. I would go to field shoots and I would send out a helicopter from the assignment desk. I just didn't care.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, what do I like? What do I want to do? So I started going on auditions to host at different places. And I would go and I'd be the only person there who didn't have any acting background. Mm. And I'd be like, am I crazy? What am I doing here? I didn't do it right. Whatever I was supposed to do, I did it wrong. I guess I'll just keep doing it wrong. And eventually I got to a call at TYT for this show called The Common Room, which was an interesting show.
Common Room was before my time at TYT,
I remember,
thank God.
You were not the biggest fan of it. And I was like, okay. Yeah, I get it.
I came after it was done.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I saw some of the footage. I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I did that for a little bit. And then I would fill in sometimes as the co-host of the regular university show.
Yeah.
And then I had my own segment. And then I pitched a channel because they were like, we want to expand. We want to do other interests. And I said, this is my idea. And they said, okay, we'll give you a shot. And then I did that.
Okay, we got to rewind a little bit.
I may have missed something.
Yeah, let's go back a little bit. So you had your audition at TYT.
Yeah, and I was like,
you got it.
I'm never coming back here. I did so bad. And I guess I didn't. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so then you started doing on Common Room. And then how did you go from Common Room to then co-hosting on TYT University?
They asked me.
They asked you. Yeah. Okay. And then how did you go from doing that
to having my own segment?
To having your own segment.
I just clearly had another interest. Mm-hmm. And John, who was the host, the main host of that show at the time, was like, you should do that segment. And I said, okay. And nobody really cared because it was the Wild West. And I just did it. I came in on Sundays and shot something in front of a green screen. And, you know, I edited a lot of it. And yeah, I did a lot of the stuff that I'm not good at, like post-production stuff.
I feel you, girl.
Yeah.
But I think that's really interesting because I think like when you first started talking about your journey that you didn't, you just like, you're like, oh, I sent out a helicopter from the news desk and I didn't give a fuck. And then now you're
I didn't care.
But see, like, look at this. And now you're like, oh, I was there on Sundays and I was doing all the stuff I'm not good at, but I really want, like, it's just a completely different part of you. And I think part of that is showing others your expertise in that and having them call on you to do that kind of stuff and then you taking that opportunity and making it yours. But did you ever communicate that you wanted that and wanted that segment and then wanted your own show? Okay, so walk me through that. Yeah.
I'm interested in doing this. Mm-hmm. If you have any more opportunities.
Yeah.
And I guess that an opportunity was made.
Yeah. But I think that's really important because I get asked that a lot. I started as a Monday as an intern, and by Friday I was on TYT University, and people always ask me like, how did you do that? Like, how did that happen? And I'm like, I asked for it. You don't get what you don't ask for. Mm-hmm. You know, you put it. You have to put it out there. Nobody's just gonna like discover you. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Besides, if you're
lucky, like Giselle in a McDonald's in Brazil, like nobody's going to discover. You have to ask for it and you have to put in the work to get what you want. Mm-hmm. So you do the segment and then how do you pitch the show from the segment? Did the segment, I mean, this is before my time, so I don't know what before my time at TYT, but did the segment do really well? Like, how did you go from that to pitching?
I don't know if it was a smash success, but it was good and people liked it, I suppose, I hope. And, you know, they had put it out there that they were accepting pitches. Mm-hmm. And I said, cool, I have an idea. And I drafted what I wanted to do and how perspective schedule and what I thought it could bring to everyone and the company itself. And I sat down with an executive and someone more like a manager. Mm. And the manager was like, all right, we're willing to give you a shot. And then the executive suddenly said, no, we're going to hire you full time, which makes me think, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is preparing. And, you know, if you happen to get lucky at some point, you're ready to go.
Yeah, I struggle with that, and I'd love to hear your opinions on it. Like, luck, I think luck is an interesting term for me, because I think obviously it was your hard work
that
showed them luck that they needed to hire you so that they could have the success.
Luck is more about being ready for opportunities.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I will take that definition of luck. I accept that definition. And at this point, like at any point during this, did you have like a holy shit moment when you're like, I could just talk about things that I'm passionate about and cover things that I'm passionate about for a living?
Yes.
What was that
very
awakening?
Happy.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to do. It's hard to imagine this life or career for yourself, because there isn't really a path. I had a path in news, mm-hmm. which is you go to your first market, then your second market, and your third market. You make this much per year. You're in this contract. Mm-hmm. It takes you 8 years to come back home, maybe. And yeah, it was out there. I could have done it. I didn't want to do it, but it was even riskier than trying to be a reporter, which is also risky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what that moment was for you. You know, do you have a specific moment? Like, I remember my first time on camera, because I hadn't done camera work before. Mm-hmm. And I remember them like turning on Amira, who was the director at the time, who's now one of my close friends. I remember her turning on the lights, and I remember looking down at my notes, and I was like, had this holy shit moment where I was like, oh my God, I get to talk about things that I'm passionate about and to a lot of people and make a difference for a living. Mm-hmm. Like, how is this my life right now?
I've had that thought many times.
Yeah.
Where you're just sitting there working, you go, how did I get here?
Yeah.
What happened?
Mm-hmm. And I'm doing like, I'll talk about it at some point on my Instagram. I'm doing a totally different job right now outside of the podcast, and totally different path than I ever thought I would take. Mm-hmm. But I still have moments now. Now my life has kind of evolved, and I still have these moments where I'm like, oh crap, like this is my reality. And when you're doing something that you love and you make that a part of your one every day, and if you can, God bless you, if you can make it part of your career, it's just this realization and this gratitude mm-hmm. for how like the magic of the universe that enables you to do that. Mm-hmm. And also your hard work and your grit and all of that, of course.
I felt like a lot of the time, like, how did this happen? Because the chances of this happening and that happening and me being here and me being there and doing this and doing that, they're all so low.
Yeah.
And it happened and it was great.
So for people who don't know exactly what geek culture is. See, like, because I didn't understand what geek culture was until I started working at TUAT, because I always thought geek and nerd were synonymous. And
they kind of are.
But I'm a huge nerd. But I was like a bookworm nerd. Mm. But like anything with video games or...
Yeah, that's true.
Sci-fi or anything like that, I am an idiot about. But I could be in the library for 48 million hours and be like happy as a clam.
So you're an academic.
Oh, I like nerd. Academic sounds like I'm a tool.
No, you're not. A tool?
I don't think I'm a tool, but academic. I'm an academic. Mm-hmm. Okay, so wait, what is geek culture?
I mean, it's, first of all, sometimes nerd and geek get used interchangeably. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like I had a show called Nerd Alert. Mm-hmm. People be like, it's not nerd, it should be geek.
And then I
went on Cara Santamaria's podcast. She does like science and more like academia, not to sound like a tool. Mm. And hers is called Talk Nerdy to Me. And people would tell her, you're not a nerd, you're a geek. So just like, no one really knows. Everyone loves to be right.
Yeah.
I will accept either one and not make a big deal about it. But geek culture is primarily entertainment-based. Mm-hmm. It's usually focused more on like comic book culture, sci-fi, fantasy. But I think it can branch out in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. I've also done a lot of video game coverage. I've done a lot of tech coverage. And I've done hard science on top of science fiction. Mm. So you can be very loose with the definition, but geek culture is primarily what you might find at like a comic convention.
And how did you establish yourself as an expert within that field? Did you just start doing it?
Oh, it was hard.
Because there's a lot of people in that field. It's very niche, but there's still a lot of people.
When I first started, it was around the time Olivia Munn like left Attack of the Show, or maybe G4 was ending at that time. And she kind of said, oh, I use this as a stepping stone. I don't really care. And I look a little bit like her racially. So people would be like, oh, this liar, this bitch, you know. And I had to, it took me years to be like, hey, I do actually know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And I do actually like it. And it sucks. I mean, I'm sure you've been there as well, where you feel like people act like you need to prove yourself to them in order to deserve to be there. Whereas other people might not need to do that. And yeah, I did. It did take years and it sucked. And I don't think it should be that way, but that was my way.
What were different ways that you established yourself as an expert in that field? Like tangible ways that for anybody listening, whether it be geek culture or any sort of thing that they'd like to be an expert in, what are some tangible tips that they can take away after this podcast to employ in their own lives to be a quote unquote expert?
I did a lot of solo videos before I was asked to be like an expert on like Nerdist or Geek and Sundry or whatever. And so I did like this one video where I talked about really hard Star Wars Legends canon, which is from the novels, and some of them are no longer canon. And that led to me getting some calls.
Five canons ago.
I felt it. bless you, doggy. Yeah, I did a lot of things on my own where I kind of analyzed and gave my own point of view and dissection of what these different things are and what they mean and what my collected theory was based on a lot of different parts of it. It's kind of like writing a paper, but in video form is what I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so doing something complicated as a, like on your own or doing something that distinguishes yourself?
I wouldn't say, I didn't think it was complicated, but I did give my own point of view on things.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So standing alone and giving your own point of view on whichever sort of topic or industry you'd want to be an expert in.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing videos, you know, freelance before then as well. I worked for some company run by somebody who didn't know what he was doing, and he just had us do videos and whatever we wanted. And I did talk a lot about video games and technology. So I remember talking about like internet, you know, like net neutrality, like adjacent topics, but I would also talk about the new Assassin's Creed. And then I edited the video myself and it looked terrible because I added all these colors and effects that I didn't know how to use. But you know, you're going to be terrible at first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just get over it.
I think that's something people really struggle with. Especially, you know, starting to get into something, they're like, well, I'm going to suck. And it's like, yes.
It's hard.
Yes, you will. And then you will do it again and you'll probably suck more. And then you just keep doing it and you just get better and better. But everybody sucks when they first start.
Yeah, I definitely did.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I did too. I look back at my first videos.
And you want to just, how do I delete this?
I'm just like cringe. And I was just like, this is awful. I'm saying this now. And now some troll on the internet is going to find it and bring it back to me.
Let's make her feel bad.
Yeah.
That's a good use of everyone's time.
Okay. So once you established yourself as an expert, even just at TYT, how did that then lead you to other opportunities? You guys, my dog is like having a freak attack. He's like, tail.
He's gonna knock over the water.
His tail is. I apologize.
Okay. I'm sorry. What was the question? Yes.
Let's try that again.
Hi.
Okay. So after TYT, after establishing yourself as an expert, how did that then lead to other opportunities?
I would often, people would contact me, but I also contacted other people and still tried for things. I'm very distracted.
Okay,
I'm
sorry. Tucker, come here. Sorry. Tucker, come. You need to lie down. You just need to lie down. I know. Thank you. I love their bone too. I just need you to lie down. Good boy. Okay, mommy's going to put her foot here. And now you stay here.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
I have almost.
It's my fault.
No,
you're good. It's my fault. Okay, so we'll just edit all this part out. Okay, so after TYT and establishing yourself as an expert there, how did that then lead to other opportunities?
I had a lot of people on my show who could also be considered experts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you aren't an asshole to work with, people tend to ask you to be on other things.
Yes. I think that, especially in our industry, I think that's so important that I think people always forget, because we're always concerned about, especially as women, competition. Mm. And you don't recognize that collaboration is much more important than competition.
I mean, I feel like it's this trope that, you know, women of a certain age need to hate each other. But in reality,
I think there's truth to it. I will say that I think there's truth to it.
It shouldn't work that way.
Shouldn't work that way completely. But I know even in, you know, past positions that I've held, there was definitely that like pitting against of women, you know? And I think once I realized that if I worked with another woman who's doing something similar with me, we could combine forces and make something even better. And then I could go on her show, or we could do something together and share audience and all of those other aspects, share ideas. Like everything started to then fall into place. But it was when I was so fearful of like, you know, oh my God, that's so oversaturated in LA with hosts. And if I associate myself with the other one, then I'm giving them something, you know, I'm giving up something or whatever that I think was more detrimental.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I'm also like, you at least got the geek thing. I'm like a blonde. I'm like every dime a dozen in LA.
Oh, there's women in my field. A lot of men too. I mean, you just never forget it too when people act weirdly competitive and cruel.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm never calling that person back. Never, ever. Yeah. So just don't be a jerk. It's real easy.
Yeah. That's a big one. Be a jerk. So don't be a jerk. Love that tip. And then what are some steps that you took to communicating what else you wanted outside of your current position? Like, getting other opportunities.
I mean, I'm still working on other opportunities now, so I guess that's a good question to ask. You know, you check in with people, you offer, you ask, like you said.
Yeah.
You make it clear that you're there and you have a good work ethic and you do the work.
And I think, I wonder too, like, I think for people in general, and I think for also women, there's always that fear of stepping on people's toes by communicating what you want, by going above and beyond. How did you sort of circumvent that?
I'm not sure that I did, because there have been times in my career where, you know, a male colleague or someone I don't even know who's just around does or says something that's very not okay. And you just, I let it slide off my back, but really it sucked and it hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that things are a little bit different now, just a few years later. And I hope it continues to grow, that we can feel free to speak up. And it's weird, but demand fair treatment and equality?
Yeah. That's not weird.
It's so weird to say.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, it should be this way.
Yeah.
Let's make it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for women listening, as we wrap this up, who may have this far-fetched passion and they want something and are not sure or are fearful that they can't make a living off of it, what advice would you give them? What would you tell them?
Fearful. I mean, that's the thing that you have to kind of conquer. You have to decide what's important to you, you know? I could have had a slightly easier time doing something else that I didn't want to do. But would I have been happy there? Would I have a sustained and long-lasting career there? And the answer is probably no. I mean, I could have stayed in longer and made an even bigger mistake. And there's that idea of like, I've already invested this much time and this much effort in this thing that I don't care about. But I think that you shouldn't be thinking that way, because if you don't want it, you don't want it. And you know that. You need to know who you are and what you want and what you're willing to do for it. And if it's, you know, maybe you're not willing to do very much, maybe that's not the way you should be going.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I want to ask you five rapid fire questions that if you could answer with one word, phrase, whatever works for you. What is one thing that you couldn't live without?
Coffee.
Yeah. What do you put in your coffee?
Sometimes nothing, sometimes almond milk.
Oh, yeah. Fancy.
Yeah, you know.
What drives you?
I think learning.
Mm.
I feel like I've been a student my whole life. I remember someone was like, why don't you be a teacher or an expert? And I thought, no, I can't do that. I'm still learning. But that's not really...
It's not how teachers work.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
But I like just that concept, like I'm still learning, is one that is not often thought of and can be very humbling. Like you still have so much. I mean, everybody has so much.
Everybody does. None of us are ever going to know everything.
Yeah. Yeah. What drives you?
I thought, didn't you just ask?
Did me? I ask you?
Yeah.
That? Oh, cut this out. It's been a long day, guys. Give me a break. I've literally been working 6 a.m. Okay.
You're so close.
What keeps you positive, Kim?
That can be hard sometimes because sometimes even I struggle with valuing myself and not taking myself for granted. Mm. I'm not religious, but there's this saying that says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Because sometimes I get very hung up on things that I could have done better. Like I recently had an audition that I bombed.
Didn't you say that earlier in the podcast and then you got the job?
No. This is a recent...
But I'm just... No. I'm saying you said you bombed an audition and then you got the job after it.
I don't know.
So I'm just saying.
Anyway, the way I've been thinking was, you know, I've been beating myself up over it and I shouldn't be beating myself up for it because intellectually I know there will be more opportunities and I can take this as an opportunity to improve myself, but it's still hard to deal with, you know, your own mistakes. So I need to understand that I can't change that. I can just do my best.
Yeah. What or who inspires you?
Like who is my role model or
could be anything. It could be like the sun inspires you. It could be a person. It could be.
Okay. I'll just say my mother then, because she was a war refugee and she came here and started over, got another degree and worked for 30 years in a job she didn't particularly, you know, feel passionate about so that my sister and I could do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is inspiring. And what is your intention? It could be for today, tomorrow, or your lifetime.
I've noticed a theme in all the things that I've produced and written and done. And that is that I want people to think a little bit more deeply about things and perhaps see that there are other points of view, other ways of viewing something. I mean, so rarely do we look at any topic, and it is what it is on the surface. There's always something more. There's always another way to analyze it or think about it. So I just want people to think, just take a little bit longer and think a little bit harder.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Kim, if people want to analyze and think hard about you, where can they find you?
Don't do that. I'm on Instagram at Kim Horcher and I'm on Twitter at Kim Scorcher.
Mm.
And there is a story there and I'm not full of myself, but yeah.
And as always, you guys can find me at Hannah Cranston. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. Also, please rate and review this podcast. I'm giving shout outs every week and reading some of your comments. And just a reminder, we'll be coming at you every Wednesday. So buckle up because it's going to be too much to handle. See you next week.